This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 22nd of August 2015 on Monocle 24.
A Bavarian magazine emporium pops up in Berlin, a Taiwanese title is celebrated by one of our staffers, and a branch of Bristol's indie publishing scene joins us in studio. All that today on The Stack. Today on the program, we welcome Rachel Taylor and Jody Daunton, editors of Another Escape magazine. They'll talk about their latest issue and also flick through some of their favorite titles. We also head to Berlin to pay a visit to the German capital's freshest magazine shop, Soda, a new little import from Munich.
It's all about being very clean so that the publications, the magazines and the books can be the center point of the shop.
Plus, our own Wei Dong Lin speaks in praise of his favorite magazine, Taiwanese title Mogu.
The voice of the magazine feels almost unedited, like a stream of consciousness, quiet even. They also feature interviews staring away quite intentionally from celebrities or famous personalities.
All that coming up and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé, on a Saturday here in Studio 1 for a change, not Studio 2 here at Midori House. To kick off the show today, almost fresh off the platform, I'm very pleased to welcome from Bristol, Rachel Taylor and Jody Daunton, editors of Another Escape. Now, of course, listeners of the program will know that this is a title which has cropped up a number of times, certainly on the part of many other of our guests who find it an absolutely fantastic title. Of course, people might also know that it's one of the magazines which really sort of makes up part of the Bristol indie, or let's say self-published, but even going much further beyond self-publishing now, magazine scene. And if you haven't seen it, Another Escape, it's a biannual outdoor lifestyle magazine based, of course, in Bristol, delving into outdoor activities. It could be a picnic in the park, walking in the woodlands, swimming in a lake. And I was in Stockholm a week before last. I was at Papercut, always my favorite stop, or at least one of my favorite stops, at least in the Nordic world, to buy magazines. And one of the stories that I thought was outstanding was this piece headlined Built to Last. And it tells the story of Peter Limmer and Sons, who are a global destination if you want to get great hiking boots made. Let's rewind a little bit, though, before we get into the current issue. The idea of the title, where did it come from? Frustration from looking at too many commercial titles in this area, Rachel?
No, I don't think it actually stemmed really from the magazine world. It was more from, I think, contemporary design culture at the time, really. Both myself and Jody were in that sort of business, and I think that we became quite uninspired. The kind of things that were coming out were very similar, and we felt quite stuck, I think, and we wanted to do something that would not only inspire ourselves, but also other people. And it started more sort of as an investigation into actually other people who were finding passion in what they did and the stories behind that, to try and inspire ourselves as well as other people who were also feeling quite stuck in what they were doing, or just kind of feeling they were setting upon a path that they didn't really want to do, but they knew that they wanted to reach a certain point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's really how it began.
Jody, when you look at the title, you know, in many ways, it's quite focused, but it also allows you to, of course, you know, bolt a number of other themes into it. You know, so broadly, yes, I mean, you see it sort of sitting in sort of the sport lifestyle section when you go into good specialist bookshops. Why did you choose this territory? What was it? Because there was breadth that you thought? Or again, yeah, I mean, somehow, you know, filling a need or potentially a gap in the market eventually?
I think there was somewhat of a gap in the market, and we actually wanted to explore a variety of kind of topics underneath the canopy of outdoor lifestyle and creative culture. So I think it kind of just gave us the scope to kind of choose topics that we thought were maybe interesting or we didn't know a lot about, and kind of be investigative in our approach to editorial. Particularly the way that we format the magazine is quite unique. I mean, we have four sections that are each divided up into a further four articles that are based around the creative process, to be inspired, to explore ideas, the process of exploring ideas and kind of making things or exploring your inspirations, and then response. And the response is quite ambiguous because it's usually as a result of the preceding three articles. So,
is the pacing always the same? Do you follow the same discipline in every issue?
I think it's evolved, really. Initially, we looked at, especially in our earlier volumes, we looked at how people could be creative in innovative or kind of unorthodox ways. So not necessarily being a photographer, an illustrator or a sculptor, but maybe people that are making houseboats out of airplane bits or coaches, kind of interesting things you wouldn't necessarily think of. You know, people that are just happy doing what they want to do.
Take us down to Bristol for a second, Rachel. Okay. What's going on there? Because it crops up from program to program, and maybe people who don't listen to the Stack every week may not be familiar with the community that has evolved down there. So if I look at it from afar, is it a case just that, yeah, it's not that far from London, so you've got the access and proximity to the capital and the buzz that might be here, but also you've got the lower cost base and everything that goes with being down the West Country? Or is it something else, you'd say?
I find this question quite interesting, and it does crop up quite a lot. And I think there isn't really a real answer to it. I think that there's a lot of creative people in Bristol. And I think that with indie publishing sort of coming to the fore and bigger publishing houses kind of not like pulling back a lot and
sure.
people kind of not working for them anymore. And again, with this sort of people wanting to go after the passion, especially after the recession and things, I think like there was a reassessment of what people wanted to do, and sort of new indie mags were born out of that, each with their sort of niche interest. And in terms of the community that's in Bristol, I think it's really great. Like, we're really lucky to have that sort of support system. Come drinking club sometimes.
Right. Nothing wrong with that.
And and they're fantastic titles, and everybody really is passionate about those individual topics that they cover. And I think that there's something really nice about being able to share the woes of independent publishing with people that understand, but also to share the triumphs, and they really understand what that means as well.
I'm also wondering if there is something to it which has to do, and I guess people who aren't maybe familiar with the print geography of the UK, there's just a lot of printing. So, you know, aside from sort of creation, you know, our magazine and so many others, and of course, you know, anyone who picks up a soft cover, hardcover book, good chance it might be printed down in Cornwall as well. So there's this tradition of printing down in the West as well. So do you think proximity also has something to do with maybe also fueling it? Because in a way, you're talking about craft, and there's something very interesting. You're closer to the touch of it almost.
Yeah, I think also a lot of the design studios and stuff in Bristol, they love their print media. And so you get a good exposure to it through sort of even the flyers and stuff that are going around. Mm. So I think you get an appreciation. You love like the tactile qualities and the embosses and stuff. And I think even someone we featured back in volume two, they'd acquired all of the old like presses off of the museum, who they'd got them off the local printing press that was at the time. And I think you're right, there is like a really good culture for print there as well.
Okay, for anyone who's not picked up volume five in front of me, I'm only going to let you choose one story, Jody. Favourite story in this issue?
I think one of my favourite stories is probably a story on a gentleman called Jack Haskell, who is a first responder and trail specialist on the PCT trail in the States. And it's basically one of those stories that you get wrapped up into this other person's world, someone who is very, you know, quite the opposite to myself. I mean, I love the outdoors, but I'm not out there hiking for 6 months at a time. And this gentleman's story was just really inspiring. I mean, he's a second generation through hiker. His dad used to take him out on trips, and that really informed him growing up. And I mean, he actually ends up getting midway through the Appalachian Trail and gets a job offer from the PCTA Association. And now he's basically living his dream. He's helping people get inspired, building up the trails, and basically doing, I don't know, making his life what he wants it to be. And I think that's very inspiring when people can transform the world that they have around them into the world they want to live in. Mm. And I think it's always like that, regardless of the subject matter, people can take inspiration from.
Rachel, your pick.
That one that you've got open there, it's on Track, which is a Scottish-based company that was started up by Alec Farmer. And it's, again, about a journey of someone who had a vision and really wanted to do it right and execute it well. And he spent months before starting up this company researching all of the local cottons, researching where he could get all of his...
And I should say, for people who don't know Track, a bag-making business.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So he wanted it to be very much based in Britain, and there was this whole kind of thing that he wanted to contribute to the renaissance of manufacturing in the UK. By doing that, he tried to train up people who were coming out of university or had already been in the industry with the skills to be able to do that. And it was a very unique take of him wanting to participate and that new Renaissance.
In a moment, we're going to get into, of course, all the titles that you brought in. But before that, we're going to go to a break. And just after that, we're going to be heading to Berlin. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. Stay with us.
Monocle's unrivaled network of editors and correspondents around the world bring you a brilliant new collection of books, the Monocle Travel Guides. And the series kicks off with London and with New York City. New York used to be such an easy city to crack for the visitor, but now its focus has fractured and shifted. Why not let Monocle help you to navigate?
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Monocle has had a bureau in New York since its launch in 2007, and our travel guide is a celebration of all that we know and love about this place. We put together a list of the finest places and experiences the Big Apple has to offer, be it a cozy stay at the Cosby Street Hotel, a late drink in a classic bar like King Cole in Midtown, or a top-notch fuss-free trim at Cheese in Brooklyn. Let us take you beyond the obvious to reveal the hidden spots New York has to offer. Published by Gestalten, these books are for people who want to get the most out of their stay, however short, and feel like locals rather than tourists. So pick up the Monocle Travel Guide to New York in Monocle shops, at monocle.com, and in all good bookstores. The Monocle Travel Guides. Cities are fun. Let's explore.
You're back with The Stack here on a Saturday on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brûlé. Now, there's nothing like a bit of competition to improve the state of the newsstand, and it's particularly good news for Berliners who already have one of the best periodical outposts in the world in the form of Do You Read Me? Now the Berlin offer is even sharper with the arrival of Soda from Munich. Spare, well-edited, and boasting a superb lineup of titles, we stop by to take a look.
It's all about being very clean, so that the publications, the magazines, and the books can be the center point of the shop.
So you're allowing a little bit of chaos into your
own. Definitely, that's also important to us, I think. And not only to us, but also for the customer, because in the beginning, when everything was even more clean than now, we felt like it looked like a beautiful showroom, or maybe a museum even, like an art gallery, and people would be a little bit intimidated to come in. We're all about the looks and the design. It's not so much about texts as about the looks. So that's very important to us. And then we'll try, and something that's different and surprises us, we have one magazine, The Quiet Leaf, which is a skater mag, and they're from Korea. Always it's about one country. The first issue was Japan. And then the texts they have in Korean, in Japan, and in English. That was something we thought was very cool. Yeah, so we're all about the new stuff that you haven't seen before. From the magazines, I would say one of the best sold is Gentlewoman. It's a nice publication. It's one of the best fashion magazines for women, definitely. Open House also is very nice and sells well. It's from Spain, and it's more of an interior. For the men, I would also say Man About Town, Fantastic Man, and then we have all those little special, more special magazines that you wouldn't find everywhere. For example, we have a new publication which is called Tapas. It's from Spain as well, do you know it? It's great, I like it because it's about food but also mixed with fashion a little bit and just in some humorous way. And then also we have so many creatives, especially in Berlin. The young ones especially, they don't have that much money yet. And the magazines that we have are expensive, they're not cheap, so they are specific about what they can afford and take home, so it has to be just some certain thing that attracts them and be right for them.
Picked up this, I've never seen it before, but one of my favorite photographers was on the front, so I thought I'd peek at his apartment. I think there's a huge appeal to it. There's a bit of a revolt against, not against the internet, I mean everyone loves it, but...
But then, yeah, people want to go back to the print and...
The nostalgia.
The feeling of paper.
Yeah. And then also, since the internet is available, there's like a movement, I don't know, magazines, print, it becomes more interesting, more special because it has to be, right?
What do you mean?
It has to be pushed forward.
Yeah, my name is Jens Stolzer, and I'm the editor-in-chief. and the publisher. Sometimes the German distributor is a little strict with us because we have, we are more focused towards the human form, the body, the naked body, and that means that that sometimes we fall under the category of sexual magazines, which has to be by law in Germany sold in a special store.
Oh.
So of course we see it as an art magazine, but people in distribution might see it differently. So that's something we've been up against for the last 10 years. But here in Berlin, things are a little different, which is good.
Jodi, it was interesting. She mentioned Open House, and just before we went on air, you want to talk about Open House as one of the titles that you brought in today. You've got the new issue, and so why is it in your grab bag of treats? What do you like about the title?
It's actually a recent discovery. I actually did a mag swap with Andrew Totter, the editor, and really excited to finally have found time to have a flick through. And what I really like about it is that it invites the reader into the spaces of the subjects that are written about, but in a way that is kind of really unique. The subjects are all people that open up their houses to the public, whether that's chefs, gallery spaces, or I guess workshops. There's all sorts of different kinds of characters within this publication. And what I think is really interesting about it is that you get a sense of community and also the reasons why people may want to open up their private spaces to people that they don't know.
Mm.
It's just quite a unique kind of concept for me personally. I mean, with the rise of Airbnb and these sorts of kind of places where people are more open to having strangers in the house.
Mm. Are you a fan, Rachel?
Yeah, I haven't actually. He's been hoarding it the whole
train trip down.
Yeah.
I'm sort of surprised because obviously Airbnb has gone through the exercise of doing their own magazine. And when I saw it the first time, I thought Airbnb should have just bought this magazine or they should buy lots of them and do an insert within. What have you brought in?
The first one I've got is the new one from Rafa, which is Mondio, which I guess is quite an odd choice for me because it's about road riding and I am very far from a road rider. But what I like about this title and what makes it different from all the other cycle magazines that are out there is it sort of encapsulates the world of the road rider, and that's not just about kind of gear and the stories of riders. It's also about some very tangential subject matters that they would maybe find interesting. For example, one that I really liked in here was about birds of prey that you might find on certain rides through different places around the world. And it's much more about the birds and sort of the experience of seeing them rather than, which applies to me as well as road riders. So that's why I think this is really great. Another one was an interview with Tom Smuts, which is one of the producers on Mad Men. And the interview begins with an introduction from the interviewer just describing his cycle through Los Angeles to his studio. And you really get this like sense of ride. And then it just goes into an interview that has nothing to do with riding.
Right.
So I think it's really great.
I just want to go back to Berlin for a moment and just mention that, of course, the first time I found your magazine, as I mentioned, was at Papercut in Stockholm. How important have indie retailers or retailers in general, the experience of being able to actually go and have a flick first and then deciding, whether to purchase or not versus people finding you, digitally and otherwise. And so I'm just wondering what sort of the friction between, the actual sort of physical print retail community versus other distribution channels.
My stand on this is obviously quite different from being a publisher and being a consumer of magazines. I much prefer as a consumer to go in and have a look and have that experience before buying. In fact, that's what I will do. I won't normally buy online. As a publisher, I prefer people to buy online.
Of course, we all love our subscribers, absolutely.
But yeah, I think it is very important. And the independent retailers out there have been really supportive of us, especially at the beginning. It was really great to build those connections. And it's all based around the love of print. Everybody is there for the same reason.
Would either of you sort of cite any retailers in particular internationally who've been important to your growth and certainly awareness?
Say Atheneum in Amsterdam for
yes.
sure. Mark Robermond there is fantastic. I mean, we're fortunate enough to meet him last year when we went to Facing Pages in Arnhem, and you just get a sense that they're really passionate about the titles that they stock. And I think that's across all the boards and most of the stores that we deal with directly, that a lot of people are passionate about the product that they're selling, and the different titles that are in store are so vast and varied that you can't help but go in.
Papersmith's up in Bristol as well is very good. That's quite a new retailer, really, and that sort of probably was born or at least supported by the big print industry that's going on in Bristol at the moment. And they seem to be doing very well, and it's led by such lovely people who are passionate about it as well.
We'll probably have time for one more title each before we're going to hear our weekly installment of In Praise Of. Jody, what else is on your pile over there?
The next title I'm going to talk about is the latest edition of Huck magazine, the Adventure issue. And what I quite like about this publication is, I mean, it's all about adventure. I mean, how can you not get excited in the summer when you're reading about people's like snippets and kind of more in-depth looks at a variety of characters and their pursuits of fun and adventure and entrepreneurship. What I found quite interesting with this title is that they're currently running a campaign with Nike SB, and I saw their online video. Mm. It's very tastefully done. The branding only comes in the last few frames. And I think it's complemented well with a nice editorial at the back of the magazine on Casper Brooker, a pro skater. And it's just a nice, subtle way of doing advertising. I mean, it's probably not the most, you know, unique way of doing it, but it's done tastefully, and I quite like that.
What titles do you both look at, Rachel, you first, that keep you on your toes? You say that these are your benchmarks that, yeah, really push you every time you sit down to commission and pull an issue together. Those titles that sort of slightly annoy you, but also you love them because they're not necessarily a step ahead, but yeah, they keep you on your guard.
They change actually issue to issue. So with the last one, actually, I kept my blinkers on quite a lot because I felt that it was becoming a little bit of a problem seeing all the titles. Before that, in the past, I would say Smith Journal has probably been one. The stories are quite similar in the way that the narratives unfold. And I mean, really in depth, really fascinating people. Obviously, Kim Folk is one of those magazines that, you know, everybody aspires to be, I guess, even from just a business model point of view. Even to like the New Yorker, where like the editorial is so in depth and you sort of, you just get sucked into that long form writing.
Yeah. When you've got limitless budgets, you can do that, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Jody, you?
I'd probably also agree with Smith Journal. I mean, back when we first launched Volume 1, there was a story that we ran and they ran, and obviously being quite new to the publishing scene, it was kind of like, oh no, they're running a similar story to us. But obviously living in completely opposite sides of the globe, it's one of those moments where you're kind of like, you want to be frustrated, but you're kind of like, well, we're on the same wavelength, so must be doing something right.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. When we come back in a moment, we're going to have our weekly edition of In Praise Of. And you are still in Studio One with me, Tyler Berlay, on this week's edition of The Stack, where, of course, every week, or almost every week, we ask a member of staff or one of our contributors to praise one of their favorite magazines for our In Praise Of slot. This week, it's our Wei Dong Lin.
I was at one of the early independent cafes in Singapore when I first came across the Taiwanese magazine, Mogu. That was when creatives were starting to resist franchises, and Mogu was right at the forefront of this handmade movement. Before then, Mandarin Chinese periodicals were largely business, current affairs, or entertainment weeklies. Mogu stood out with its illustrated covers that were almost childlike and yet instantly endearing. Every page in Mogu is clean and uncomplicated, with writings revolving around a carefully selected theme. It's bound by a strong staple down in the center, printed on thick, matte, high-quality paper, soy ink nonetheless. It's a magazine you want to sit down and spend some time with, placed flat open right beside your coffee or sandwich. The voice of the magazine feels almost unedited, like a stream of consciousness, quiet even. They also feature interviews steering away quite intentionally from celebrities or famous personalities. So you open up a magazine with these diary-like entries accompanying interviews with mostly unknown and hardworking artists published in verbatim. And its down-to-earth and unembellished quality is very, very attractive to me. Mogu means mushroom in Chinese. And while the founder muses about the curious and highly adaptable meaty fungi having an umbrella of spores waiting patiently for the rain, I spoke to one of them casually once, and they said naming the brand Mushroom is quite simple. Everyone in the company had their hair trimmed to the same length all round, a bob that resembles a mushroom. and the magazine is just as personable as that. The penultimate issue is named As Love Becomes a Thing of the Past. This issue, published last year, is especially poignant for me, as it explains why Mogu has decided to pause for a while. The editor writes, 当爱已成往事, as love becomes a thing of the past, it heals slowly and remains as a faded scar. It is a process, a scene from a journey, and there is no need to sigh or be sad. When you ask an elderly man if he loves his wife he's been married to for a lifetime, the answer will undoubtedly be definite. But they wouldn't be inseparable or locking lips passionately when they see each other every day. 见面吻得难舍难分. That describes a publication very well for me. It's not about important issues or anything you really cannot live without. But it holds a special place because it's an anthology of experiences, the very little things in life. It doesn't scream or shout out at you, and it's composed of mostly personal musings about the selected theme by the editorial team, written in prose.
That was our Weidong Lin's In Praise of Mogu magazine out of Taiwan, which is having a bit of a hiatus. Rich, what do you think about maybe when you started this adventure with your own magazine, the whole notion of bringing a magazine out? But do you think magazines need to run and run, or can they have a hard stop and can they dip and come back, do you think?
I think so. If you've got that audience there, then they'll wait for it probably as well. I mean, one of the ones that I brought along, the Alpine Review, they do very much
that.
Maybe
you want to jump to that now, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely publish when they feel like it, and I feel like people who want to wait for that title will, especially this is such a slab of a magazine. I mean, you need like a year, I think, to read that anyway, especially with how in-depth the articles are as well. Yeah.
Jody, you probably have the last title before we have to say goodbye today. I don't think we've exhausted. I think you've got one left there in the mix, I believe.
The last title, admittedly, I am very unfamiliar with. It's Far Ride from Seoul in Korea. And it's basically...
How did you come across it?
I came across it, actually, we were in one of our favourite stores in Bristol Papersmiths, and I was chatting to the owner, Sid, and she recommended this new title to me, just said it just come in, did I want to check it out? I mentioned we're coming on the stack, and...
This was literally yesterday.
This was literally yesterday, actually, yeah. And, I mean, it's very different to some of the other cycle magazines that are out there. It's very slow-paced. There's not a lot of text, actually. I haven't spotted a single illustration, but there are some interesting graphics that show the rider's elevation and at points of the ride, and it's kind of more about the notion of riding rather than the people who are riding, so it's much more focused on the cycling and the kind of spirit of that.
And in the spirit of tempo and moving forward, when do we see Volume 6?
November.
Okay, so we've got fingers crossed, but we have a few months to run. Well, we are going to have to leave it there, and that brings us to the end of this 156th edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. And of course, huge thanks to Rachel Taylor and Jody Daunton of Another Escape, and of course, to our other contributors today, and our producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and as ever, our studio manager, Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note, info@monocle.com. I think I'm going to be back here next Saturday instead of our Tom Edwards. Of course, you can always listen again. Again at monocle.com or via iTunes and many other channels in between. But for now, for me, Tyler Berlay, goodbye.